read it. I was reading it about my poem.
Okay, so what I wanted to talk about today, I'll start off with just a short story about, I don't even know how many years ago, more than a decade ago, I was watching a 60 Minutes interview with Leonard Bernstein. Leonard Bernstein is the famous 20th century composer, conductor, right? So in the course of the interview, I think it was Mike Wallace asked him, you know, how did you achieve this greatness? And he said, I was 100% dedicated to this endeavor. 100%. I don't do anything else. I don't think about anything else. My life is my music. My music is my life. So now, this gave me great angst because, very simply, I'm not that dedicated to one thing, though I would like to be. I mean, I would like to really focus on, you know, my Torah learning or this. I do all kinds of stuff. I'm an engineer. I like to play sports. I go out with my kids. I learn different things. And I learn Torah. Right. So now I don't see how my life could follow that. And so then I'm doomed, according to Leonard Bernstein. So what I would like to understand and discuss with you today is, what is really the best path for man to choose to actualize himself, to make something of his life? I mean, should we just be Leonard Bernstein, or should we be who we are, or some kind of something in between? So this question was actually dealt with in the Renaissance period, where they talked about the difference between homo universalis, the universal man, and homo particularis, the particularist man, like specific. Leonard Bernstein. Specific, right. Okay, now that discussion at the time, which they came out with Renaissance man, who was involved in many things, was actually preceded by Aristotle. I found an interesting quote here, the first source, from Aristotle, and he says as follows. Every systematic science, so we would translate this as a field of study, the humblest and the noblest alike, seems to admit of two distinct kinds of proficiency. One which may be properly called scientific knowledge of the subject, what we would call really, you know, in-depth study, while the other is a kind of educational acquaintance with it. Which, now you might think, like, this just means, you know, yeah, I'm familiar with investing practices, or I'm familiar with arts. No. Look what he says means educational acquaintance. For an educated man should be able to form a fair offhand judgment as to the goodness or badness of the method used by a professor in his exposition. What he's saying is that educational acquaintance, like, you're not a big mumche, but when you hear the professor speak, so you can tell if he's saying nonsense or not, or where he's coming from. You're pretty well understood. Yeah, I mean, but you're not equipped to give a lecture, but you certainly can analyze and critique what he's saying. So that's very significant. So now he goes on and he says, to be educated is in fact to be able to do this. And even the man of universal education, this Renaissance man that we were speaking of, we deem to be such in virtue of his having this ability, the ability to have this educational acquaintance. It will, however, of course, be understood that we only ascribe universal education to one who in his own individual person is thus critical in all or nearly all branches of knowledge, and not to one who has a like ability merely in some special subject. So he's saying, you know,
this is believing to yourself,
right. Right, what's that? Yes, of course. So now, what he's saying is that the Renaissance man, homo universalis, is a guy who is not the master of this subject, but he has a mastery of that subject and of many subjects, okay?
What you do with what you know, how much you know.
Right, okay, so that's true also. Okay, so now what he's saying here is that there's an ideal that not many people can get to. I mean, when I read about the different people who could possibly fall into this category, so we're talking about Aristotle, Plato, Da Vinci, I mean, big minds that covered big, broad areas of study. Okay? So now the question that I would like to address really is, what do we, the Jews, have to say about that? Does Judaism take a stand on this Renaissance man versus Leonard Bernstein man? Or, right? So I want to use as our paradigm Bezalel from this week's Parsha. So now Betzalel was introduced last week in Kitisa, and now he's introduced, reintroduced again in Vayakel Pekudei. This is from Vayakel. It says, Vayomer Moshe al Bnei Yisrael, Re'u, Kara Hashem b'shem Betzalel ben Uri ben Hur l'mate Yehuda, v'imale oto ruach Elohim b'chokma b'tvuna u'vedat b'chol ha'melacha. So I emphasize these words, you know, chokma bina b'dat, because they will really explain to us who is this person. But as we go on, it says, v'lachshov machshavot la'asot. Now, I bolded the word la'asot, which in this little paragraph appears three times, to emphasize that we're talking about asiyah, we're talking about doing, right? Now, I thought to myself, you know, I started looking how many times does this doing word, osei, appear? And at first I started cutting out the paragraph and trying to put for you on this sheet every time it appears. And it appears like once or twice in every paragraph. And then I thought, wow, this is amazing. I'm going to do a search. How many times the root word of osei is used? Now this chart that you see here is all the uses of osei in the book of Shmot. This is on the bottom, on the x-axis, you see here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up to 40. That's chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3 up to chapter 40. And on the y-axis you see 0, 5, 10. That's the number of appearances that the word is used. It could be Asu, ase, vayas, vayasu. Okay, all the conjugations of to do. All right? So now you see in the beginning of the book, we barely get over 5, 6, 10, 11. All of a sudden, there's a huge jump. It doubles. We're over 20 in chapter 25. So now chapters 25 to 29 are Truma Tetzaveh, where we're talking about making the Mishkan and the Kohanim stuff and all that good stuff. Then it drops down again to 15 and below. That's in Ki Tisa, the whole story of the Chet HaEgel. And then it jumps again in Vayakel Pekudei, and it hits the peak. 36 and 37 is when we introduce Betzalel. And you see here, just under the table, so I wrote here, like in Perek Lamed Vav 36, it says, Va'asa Betzalel, Perek Lamed Zayin, right? Va'yas Betzalel. Betzalel is the man who does. He's this doer, and he's well known. He's the artisan. He's the guy who put together everything in the Mishkan, right? Inside and out, right? So I would say, on the surface of it, he has a very specific focus. He's Leonard Bernstein of the Mishkan. He has devoted his entire life to the artisanry of this place, right? But we would be jumping to conclusions. If you look at the Mefarshim, I just brought here the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. So the Ibn Ezra says, "V'hine Betzalel haya male kol chokma b'cheshbon b'midot arachim melachet shamayim chokmat hatoladot." Which this is really natural sciences, say the commentators. V'sod haneshama, the secrets of the soul. So he's a spiritual person and a physical. He's involved in both. And the Ramban expands on that. It says here, first of all, he talks about the physical. In the underlined part, three lines down in the Ramban, so it says at the end of the line, V'hine, hu pele, sheyimtza behem adam. It's amazing that you're going to find a guy amongst all the people who left Egypt. Hacham gadol bekesef zahav. He's wise in the use of silver and gold. Ubecharoshet even, and also in engraving precious stones. Ve'etz, and in wood. Vechoshev verokem veoreg, and he also can do all kinds of weaving and artisanry with fabrics and cloth. Ki af belomdim lifnei hachamim lo yimtza baki b'chol ha'omanuyot kulam. Because even if you find somebody who learned in front of us of somebody, he'll never be able to learn all these things to this degree. So first of all, he's an amazing artisan, and he's not just in a specific category. I mean, he can do everything in this whole field. Now, after that, it says ve'od shehu chacham gadol bechokma utvuna uvedat, and so he is very wise in wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Lahavin sod hamishkan.
Does it matter that Hashem had to put this knowledge in him?
Well, no.
Have it naturally.
Right, no. So the Gemara says, and the Mefarshim say that God can't give you a gift that you don't already have. Meaning that, you know, he might have been, he inspired him, he influenced him, he made him great, but it's something that he had within him. Okay, so now it says, right. Just a quick question.
You've made this analysis only for Shemot.
Yes.
Did you do it for the rest of Torah?
No, I didn't. I mean, I could do it. I thought it would be interesting just to do in the one book. But yeah, we could do it for the whole of Torah. Yeah, it would be very easy.
Because it would be very interesting.
Right, to see
where this was targeted.
You're right. I'll try to follow up with you afterwards.
Thank you.
Okay. So now it says here, Lavin sod hamishkan kol kelav lama tzivu al ma yirmezu. So what he's saying here is that he didn't just make these nice, beautiful pieces. He understood the symbolic value, the spiritual value. He understood that when we're making the menorah, it has all those meanings in it. And so that affected the way he made it. So he's a spiritual giant as well as being a capable artisan. Okay? And then it goes on even more. At the second to last line, it says, Ve'od. And the Ramban here quotes the Gemara in Brachot. At the end of the line, it says, Litzaref otiyot shenivru bahen shamayim ba'aretz. So now the Gemara is attributing to Bezalel the capabilities that God used to make the world. God, as it were, this is a mashal, right? Put together the letters to create the world. Whatever that means, Bezalel used those same kind of tools to make the Mishkan. And as we know, the Mishkan is a microcosm of the world. They're putting Bezalel on the level of God's creativity. And if you turn over the page, the Malbim says it straight. He says as follows, the first source on the second page, it says, Sheshmo Bezalel nitan lo al shem she'amar lo Moshe Bezel el haita v'yadata kamo shekatuv chazal. So it says in the Gemara that we'll get to in a minute that Moshe saw that Bezalel could really intuit what God wanted. And so he was Bezel El. Now the Malbim continues and he says, Rotzel Omar, Shaha'olam kulo, Hutzel Elohut v'dmut hochmato. The whole world is like a shadow of God's wisdom. Ukamo shekatuv beperush breishit, Shetzelem Elohim, Hainu Tzel Ha'elohim. Tzelem Elohim is really this shadow of God. We all have this Tzelem, which is like we are a kind of faint reflection of God Himself. And so now he goes on and he says, Ki Hatzel Hu Avi Hatzayarim. Because God Himself is the father of all artists and creators. V'haolam Hagadol, and of course of the whole world, the great world. V'kenegdo Ha'adam. And against him is reflected man, Shuha Alama Katan, which is like the small world. Hu Tzel HaElohut V'Tzalmo. And so we, as men, are really a reflection, like we said, or a shadow of God's greatness. V'Hamishkan Shebo Hitzayru Kol HaOlamot. And the Mishkan, as we said, is a microcosm of the world. But Ken Kol Inyanei HaAdam, in all of the matters that pertain to man, Haya Gam Ken Tzel HaElohut, is also a reflection of God. V'Kol Zot Hisig Bezalel. And all of this that we just said, Bezalel achieved, right? And because of this, they said that Bezalel could put together the letters like God did when He created the world. So what we're saying here is Bezalel is the paradigm Renaissance man. To the extent, even more than Aristotle, that he knew everything. He achieved everything. He did everything to the point where he was Bezel El. He was a reflection of God. He achieved the maximum that man could achieve. And so I would say if, at the beginning, if we asked, you know, we saw that Aristotle, Da Vinci, Renaissance man, the secular world looks up to this kind of distributed wisdom. So too does Judaism, and we have it in the body of Bezel El.
Is that a little bit circular, isn't it? Because he exhibited it almost supernatural. He was only a kid, like 13.
Right. Okay, so there's a Gemara that talks about that.
It's unbelievable. And then to say, well, that's the paradigm, that might be the exception to the rule.
Okay, and so that's why I bring you the Gemara that says even more than that.
I mean, I'm impressed with the so-called profile of Bezalel by the various proportions. But I'm just questioning why was his so-called greatness presented at this point with Mishkan and not before.
I got the blue. And you don't hear from him again either?
Well, I mean, when and at what point did you want somebody to do? I mean, basically what we're saying is that
if you had such creativity, but we're
talking about a slave nation. I don't care how great you are. If you're locked up in the Soviet Union, then you can't really do much.
I understand, but I mean, apparently Moshe and nobody else knew about Bezalel's wisdom, his ability to be so creative.
Right. It's okay. Like, I mean, but we're looking at history, and this is history developing, and this was his time. You know, every man has his time.
God's
in
the
room.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. The timing seems to be, of an interest to me.
Right.
I mean, I understand that because of the Mishkan and how it was put together and the creativity of that, really required someone of a special talent. But this talent, I don't know if it's necessarily limited to architectural context. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, okay. I mean, I think there's a couple of things that you're bringing up. I mean, one is, his ability and this amazing, like the Ramban said, that, out of this slave nation, this guy came up. I think that is the Chokhmah Bina Vadat that God imbued him in. And as you asked before, I mean, did he have anything? Yes, he had the potential and he had certain character traits, but it wasn't until God really imbued him with this power and that was needed at this time. And, even perhaps to teach us this lesson that there is a place, in fact, for this kind of a Renaissance man within Judaism. And that's what I want to show you here. Is the Gemara.
Maybe everybody.
Huh?
Maybe everyone has that.
Well, the analogy, basically, from what I read about it, is you identify a child who is genius when he's 8, 10,
right?
12.
Right?
However, his development and involvement is not known throughout the world until he maybe 30 or 40 or whatever age it'll be. Sometimes. So during that whole period of time, he's evolved, slowly rising.
Right.
Maybe, I don't know.
So, but now look, to really, really solidify this whole idea of Renaissance man within Judaism, I bring you this Gemara. It's an amazing Gemara. So, Gemara Masechet Sota Daf Mem Zayin. It's really the Mishnah Tet. Starts off like this. Mi shemit Yosi ben Yoezer ish Tzreida v'Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim batlu ha'ashkolot. Batlu ha'ashkolot. So the Gemara here, in the next page, which I have down here, ask, my ashkolot, what are you talking about?
What is this?
Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, ish shahakolbo. Ish shahakolbo, kind of a play on words, ashkolot, ish shahakolbo. It means the man who has everything in him. So now the question is, what is this everything? Hakol.
Sounds like Abraham.
Okay, so now if you take a look at the Perushim, so first I bring in the Rambam on the Mishnah. Ha'eshkolot kinui le'ish ha'kolel ha'midot ha'na'alot, who has these exalted character traits, v'ha'mada'im le'sugehem, and also all kinds of wisdom and knowledge, all the different types of knowledge that there is. This is Renaissance man. And if that's not enough, look what the Meiri says on the Gemara. It's the same words. V'ha'eshkol hu mashal hu ish nichlilobo shleimut ha'midot. He has the complete perfection of his character traits, v'shleimut ha'ochmot kulan. And he has achieved greatness in all of the wisdoms, just like Aristotle said. Okay? So now we have the strain in the Gemara, along with our Mefarshim, that are telling us that we, in fact, ascribe to this ideal of Renaissance man who can spread his wisdom around as much as possible. So now, if you recall what the Gemara just said, was that there were two people, Yossi and Yossi, who were the last of the great Mohicans. When they died, there were no Anshe Eshkolot. Okay? So now Rashi tells us something amazing about this pair. Look what Rashi says also on the same Gemara. Mefaresh b'Gemara she'akol bahen. They had everything. Ad yemehen lo haya machloket b'chokhmei Yisrael. And until their days, there was never a machloket in amongst the wise people of the Jews. Okay, and by the way, this we're talking about Yossi, and Yossi is the head of the Sanhedrin and the head of the Beit Din. We're talking about big people, right? Kulan hayu omrim dvarim kenitanan lemoshe mi Sinai. from Moshe to Yossi and Yossi, everybody said and learned like Moshe. They were all Anshei Eshkolot, and they all knew exactly what Moshe said, and there were no issues. Okay? You want me?
Can you tell me one point we're looking at in terms of when they lived?
Yeah, they're the... Yeah, they're the beginning of the Zugot. They got it from Antigonus. They're the third Mishnah in the Pirkei Avot. So I have here the Korot Chaim. Take a look. Yeah, it says Yossi ben Yoazer and Yossi ben Tzred, Yossi ben Yoazer and Yossi ben Yehuda. מהחכמים הקדמונים, ראשון מחכמי הזוגות, חמישה דורות לפני התחלת תקופת התנאים. תנאים. They were five generations before the תנאים. Okay? Okay. So now what he says, so now what Rashi is telling us is that they were the first ones. It says here in the underlined part of the Rashi, V'hen harishonim shenichlaku. They were the first people that actually had an argument about what was the right law. And the detail is b'smichat korbanot b'yom tov, whether you put your hands on it, whether you don't, whatever you do.
They couldn't resolve it.
V'hu, and now it says, V'hu aya machloket rishon shaya b'yisrael b'divrei Torah. There was never a machloket. So now this leads to a giant question. Wait a minute. These guys are great things. We just got through praising Renaissance man up and down. Now these guys are the first ones who actually bring a machloket. So that is, either a machloket is good or being Renaissance man is bad or something we don't understand. Okay? Now to understand the answer, we look at another Gemara. It's a Gemara in Masechet Tmura. They quote the same Mishnah of Sota that Yossi and Yossi were the last ones, and they ask our question. How could it be? Great people didn't get it? So it says like this. And the underlined part in the middle of the source, it says Masechet Tmura. Mikan ve'elach lo hayu lemidim Torah kemoshe Rabbeinu. From this point on, they weren't learning. It's not only that they gave over, they weren't learning like Moshe. The people at this time, when the machlokot started to develop, they didn't learn like Moshe Rabbeinu. They weren't anshei eshkolot. Okay, so now what does it say here? So now it says, in the last line, it says, Ipflig ba besof shnei debitzar liba. Rashi explains, what does this mean? Shenitma'et halev besof shnotav nishtachu. They said they got old and they forgot. That's what it says. The Gemara says, the reason that the machloket appeared was because these guys were anshei eshkolot, but they got old and they forgot the rule, and that's it. So then you got to ask the question, what about the other generations? Nobody got old? Nobody forgot anything? So the Bra and the Shita Mukubetz had come to our help. You take a look here in this Chevruta, they quote the two opinions. Masha amar ad shemit Yosef ben Yosef v'chulei, hainu velo ad bichlal. Ki itam hitchila machloket hagahot hagra. So the Gra says, when we said that it ended with Yossi and Yossi, they didn't mean they were on Sheshkalot, the generation before them was. They're already the turnover. So that's how the Gra explains it. And now, the Shita Mekubetz, it doesn't accept that. Right. Yeah, because you're not on Sheshkalot. V'od, shenichlaku rak b'halacha achat, v'ilu achare mitato nechlaku b'harbe alachot. So the Shita Mekubetz, it says, you're right, it's a problem. Machloket is not good. Anshei Eshkolot is good. So what happened here? This is the end of that great period of Anshei Eshkolot, and so they got hit one machloket. But after that, it was all down here, and there's many machlokot. Okay? Be that as it may, however you want to explain it, what the Gemara is clearly saying is that to be an Ish Eshkolah is a great thing. Not only that, and this is stunning, I never thought of it, is that to be a vehicle for the Mesorah, you need to be an Ish Eshkolah. You need to be a wise person that is well versed in many fields. Zugot were not robots. You didn't just say, when they say Moshe, you know, Masar the Torah and so forth, you know, it was passed down from here to here to here. It wasn't just a bunch of robots saying, okay, repeat after me, okay, repeat after me, and just passing it down. No! These guys learned it. These guys understood it. These guys analyzed it. These guys put it to work and passed it on as a living body of wisdom. And so when the Anshei Eshkolot lost it, so too was the Mesorah begin to break down and full of machlokot. And so it's an amazing thing. We want to be Anshei Eshkolot. We set as the paradigm, like Aristotle, like Bezalel, like all of these people, this is really what we want. We want you to be diversified and wise in as many things as you can be. Okay, so much so that this brings us back to Bezalel. So if you take a look at this, Gemara Yushalmi, Masechet Peah, it says, Rebbe Tanchuma B'Shem Rav Huna, ובצלל בן אורי בן חור למטה יהודה עשה את כל אשר ציווה השם את משה. So now, this is in our parsha, and it says, ציווה אותו משה אין כתיב כאן, אלא אשר ציווה השם את משה. It doesn't say that Moshe told Bezalel what to do. It says that God told Moshe, and so after that, Moshe has to tell Bezalel that there could be some kind of gap in the transmission from God to Moshe and Moshe to Bezalel. So it says that Bezalel did everything that God commanded Moshe. Wow, that's amazing. How did Bezalel manage to do everything that God never told him? He told Moshe. So look what it says. Look what it says. Afilu dvarim shebetzalel. This I'm reading on the last line of that Yerushalmi. Shebetzalel lo shama mipi ravo Moshe. Hiskima dato shel Moshe kamoshem neemar leMoshe miSinai. Halacha leMoshe miSinai. When Bezalel did things, even that Moshe didn't directly tell him, when Moshe saw it, he said, good. That's excellent. That's what God wanted. And there's Rashi brings a whole story about that. In any case, I saw an amazing Perush that's also now in the Bar Ilan Shoot. It's called Alei Tamar. And it's by Rav Yisachar Tamar. It was published in the 1980s. Look what he says about this very Gemara. Afilu davar shelo shama mipi Moshe iskima dato kamo sheneemar leMoshe miSinai. In the underlying part, umizeh. Halacha brura karu chaza halacha leMoshe miSinai. Klomar, harehi ki'ilu halacha leMoshe miSinai. What he's saying is something stunning. What he's saying here is that when we say something's halacha leMoshe miSinai, that means we don't have a direct source, right? We don't have something like in the Torah that we can say, oh, you learned it from this verse. Oh, Chazal said it like this. No, Chazal filled in the gap. There was some kind of gap. Just like Bezalel filled in the gap from between what God wanted and what Moshe told him, there was some kind of gap about what to do. But because Bezalel was an Ish Ashkelot, because he was a Renaissance man, he could figure out what went between point P and D and A and C, right? He figured it out, and it was the correct thing. So too, Chazal were smart enough to figure out when there was some kind of a hole in the halakha, but they understood the whole structure, so they were able to fill in that gap so sure, assuredly, that they could call it ki'ilu halakha leMoshe miSinai. Not that Moshe really passed it down, but that it fits so perfectly into the body of Mesorah that we can be sure that it was really part of it. It's like you know, the little piece in the, you're putting together some broken pottery, that they know how to put in that missing piece. If you're an Ish Ashkolah, you can put in the piece with that kind of assuredness. Okay? And so that's really the greatness of being an Ish Ashkolah. So now this brings us to us. Okay, we're talking about Aristotle, Plato, Da Vinci, Bezalel, Avdil, Moshe. The Gemara here says, after Yossi and Yossi, there was no Ish Ashkolah until Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so that's what we're talking about.
Just when the person says it's Halakha Moshe miSinai, usually has nothing, no proof to say. Usually in the concept of argument, he makes a secular, I have a Mesorah that there's a Halakha Moshe miSinai. I'm not thinking logically about it. And the other side says, oh, well, okay. And it's sort of, if that's the case.
Right, well, you know, we really sort of need to try to look into all the uses of when it is, but I think this is a very novel use that I'd never come across before. That basically it's saying it's piecing the puzzle together because you are so part of it. Right.
Other than the opposite of what they're trying to say.
Right.
We're removing human logic and intellect.
Right. And saying,
we just have the Mesorah.
Right. So there could be different applications.
Did you put this together?
Yeah. So now, if you answer, we want to answer the question. Really, what are we supposed to do? I mean, I started this whole thing with, you know, we want to learn for ourselves today, you know? And I mean, as much as we would like to say we're like, you know, Aristotle, Da Vinci, Rabbi Akiva.
We live in the Western world, but right. No one would tell anyone.
Right.
Except the Yeshiva. Right. All of them, you know.
Right. Right. So but what I want to say is like this. Really, this is an ideal. When Aristotle made this, it's an ideal. When we're talking about, you know, Rabbi Akiva, Moshe to Yossi and Yossi, we're talking about a very high standard. And that's good, because that's what an ideal is. An ideal is something to strive for. So if this is the ideal to strive for, so then we should all. If we have the opportunity to go and hear a class about investing, about art, about math, about something that's not in your little box, that's good. Okay? Like the Rambam said, Madaim Lasugehen. I don't know how this is going to influence you, but it's going to influence you. It's going to build you out. It's going to make you better. We may not achieve Aristotle's educational acquaintance in these things, but I think we would be well served to broaden our horizons and go to different shiurim when the opportunity arises, and not look at it as bitul Torah, but to look at it as an enrichment of our Torah. I mean, there's the idea of cross-pollination of ideas that will actually make your Torah richer. And I will end off with just this one midrash of Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which leaves us on a very positive note. So he says that the world was created with ten sayings, and it was finished off with three things: Chokhmah, Bina, and Daat. Okay, and he brings a pasuk from Mishlei that shows that God created the world with Chokhmah, Bina, and Daat. Chokhmah, Bina, and Daat are really, I would say, the foundations of Renaissance man. Okay, you need to be imbued with that. That's how Bezalel became the Renaissance man. And so he says, and that's how the Mishkan was built. And he quotes our pasuk from the parsha about how Bezalel had Chokhmah, Bina, and Daat. Wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. I mean, there's different ways to, and then, you know, you can look in Rashi and so forth. But in any case, right? So then he says, and then he brings a pasuk that says the Beit Hamikdash was built by Chokhmah, Bina, and Daat, and he says, and the Beit Hamikdash in the future will also be built with this Renaissance man characteristics. And then he leaves us in this bolded part. It says here, the ubishloshtan. Chokhmah, Bina, and Daat, atid liten shalosh matanot tovot liYisrael, and we can be assured that in the future, God will also gift to all of Am Yisrael this gift of being a Renaissance man, and He will finally send the ultimate Renaissance man, the Mashiach, b'mehera v'yamein.
This is one of the most beautiful lectures on the Renaissance that I've heard.